I want to thank all of you who are my elders. In my tradition, if you are old enough to be my grandmother, you are my grandmother. If you're old enough to be my mother, you are my mother and my father. I thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. Thank you to all of you who are my sisters for the honor of being able to share my thoughts with you, you who are my brothers, old enough to be my brother, you are my brother, old enough to be my sister, you are my sister. I want to thank all of you who are younger, the children. Daniel is in this place. Tasha. Jay. You who are younger. What I want to talk about to start with tonight is my own experience, because this is what I know the best. I survive. I am still alive. I am Nusukya Ayat. I am Lakota. My grandmother told me this way. She said, say this, Mia Lakota. I am Lakota. I am the daughter of Amy, the granddaughter of Josephine. I am of the Mills and Janice families, of the people that are known to you as Sioux, the Oglala Sioux, from the Pine Ridge Indian Agency in Pine Ridge, South Dakota.
I am also out of a town in the mountains in Colorado called Everdeen, out of Humidify, Alaska, Diamond Bay, Alaska, Darrington, Washington, San Jose, California, Edmonds, Washington, Sumner, Washington, Pacific Ocean University, and other places. The name that I shared with you, Nusukya-Ayap, is a Coast Salish name in the Pacific Northwest. This name was given to me by a man named Terry Tafoya, who is from Cal Sever and also an adopted member of the Warm Springs tribe. The name is a Warm Springs name, and I will tell you more about it. My name was given in November of 1984 and affirmed on February 9th, just 2 weeks ago in 1985. At the Stokomish Reservation near Southern Washington. I'm also the daughter of Carrie Napton, and I am granddaughter of Ruby Thomas and Dean Napton, people out of Canada and England. I'm the wife of James, the daughter-in-law of Ruth Straub and Stephen Goodman, out of German and probably ancestrally Jewish heritage. I'm the mother of Stephen, who is 17, and Jamie, who is 9. My talk tonight is my experience, choosing to forget. This is my own story. I am present, like the heron, I stand still, very visible, vulnerable, I am the present form of my future. I don't know what the future is. I don't know what lies ahead. But as the child is, the newly born, the potential of all that I am to become is contained in this moment. From this moment of shared experience, our lives are connected. You are teaching me. What is happening in this moment affects the future, beyond this generation, into the seventh generation. I am present in the past. All of my memories, all of my experiences are here with me. I am here before you after more than 37 years of life. I am more than that. I am the child of the seventh generation, the child of the 77th generation. I am present in this moment, in the presence of your precious life. Here we are on our Mother Earth, our grandmother. We are surrounded by the sky, the air, the clouds, the stars, the snow, our grandfather. We are present. I am also the forgiven daughter of God, Unti, which means grandmother, Tinkasila, which means grandfather in the Lakota language. God has chosen to love and chosen to forgive me. And I believe that you also are the chosen and deeply loved children of our Creator. When I was younger than 7, I wanted to die. I was regularly beaten. I was very often hungry and dirty and alone. Too often, when I slept, I was in danger. Too many nights, I was awakened, molested, and assaulted. And I have survived. And I must choose to forgive and love. When I was younger than 12, I wanted to die. I was taught how to walk, how to eat, how to cook, how to clean, how to sew, how to work, how to iron, how to wash dishes, how to survive alone, how to care for the 7 children that I had in my care, to accept abuse because I was an Indian, to accept abuse because I was white. I have survived, and I must choose to forgive and to love. When I was younger than 18, I wanted to die. I had learned to expect exclusion. I had learned that I was like, they used to say, Leslie Uggams, every time Mitch Miller was on TV. I was a noble savage. I was a dying race. I was an Indian princess. I was a half-breed. I learned that the people who loved me were ashamed of me. I learned that being half-white made me slightly more okay than being a full-blooded Indian to the white, and slightly less than human to the full-blooded Indian. I learned that I was a possession, that I existed for sexual pleasure, for one man, and a naturally immoral temptation for the rest, a squaw. I was a disadvantaged youth, culturally deprived, expecting and deserving abuse, exploitation. I learned that only God could love and forgive. I have survived, and I must choose to love and forgive. When I was younger than 30, I really wanted to die. I had been taught. I had learned. My hair was cut, my lessons learned. Makeup, gardening, shopping, teaching, churching. I was a little white doll, wonderfully faded red, perfectly suitable for token Indian. First college graduate, first master's degree, first woman principal, first daughter-in-law. I owned my first home. I had my first son. I had my first daughter. Yet I learned that I was easily despised because I did not grow up on a reservation, because I was married to a white man. I have survived, and I must choose to love and forgive. When I was younger than 37, I really wanted to die. In spite of all that I did, I'm still alive. And now, I want to live. I want to live up to my name, Nusukya Ayat, the silver salmon woman of the legend. She who gives yet is renewed. I want to choose to live. I want to choose to love. I want to choose to forgive. As you sit there, you may choose to make a judgment because of my shape or my sex or my eyes or my hair or my skin color or my history. You may choose to accept the hand or the heart that I offer. Like a heron, I stand still and vulnerable, and I choose to live, and I choose to love and to forgive. This naming of myself is very important to me. And I invite each of you to name yourself and to choose to love and forgive. And along that line, I've asked that they would help us have paper and pencil, and I've asked you to bring some. I have spoken to you from my heart as I prepared to meet you. And I would invite you to take a few minutes and respond to me with some writing. And then I will have the second half of my presentation. To listen to whatever. whatever it is that is within them, and to say the things that they have to say. And when I knew that I was coming up here and I tried to sit down and write out what I was going to say, I wanted to give you a scholarly presentation about the many pieces of information that there are that is so essential for you to know about Indian people. And I have taught classes, and I have written curriculum, and it seemed that this would be a very easy thing to do. But there were some words in my heart, and I didn't get settled until I sat down and wrote them. And then I tried to say, that's very good, fine, you learned something. All right, now finish your presentation. This is to go against my training, which is to be responsive to the spirit that is within us. We are taught not to repress it or push it down or sit on it, because what you have is not yours. What you have been given, whether it's your words or your art or your craft or your work, is a gift to all, which the Creator has for all, and you are simply the vessel, the means by which this gift is being given. So for the health and welfare and well-being of the people, you say the things that you're given. But I do want to thank you for the opportunity to be here to say these things. The second part that I wanted to share, and I've done a little flipping tonight. When Elmer wrote, he suggested that I talk about Native American experiences, concerns, needs, dreams, and I did take those categories. I think right now I would like to talk a little bit about needs. Choosing to live. And for tomorrow, to talk about some concerns, choosing to love, and some dreams, dancing the vision. Not tomorrow, but the next time, whenever it comes. So these are my needs. In my tradition, it is very difficult to talk about somebody else, to be a spokesperson for Indians or the Lakota people. I have chosen to talk about myself, and my experience touches on much of the history of Indian people. But you would have to know a lot of Indian people and touch a lot of Indian history before you could feel that you really got a sense of what it meant, what Indian needs are, what Indian experience is. I need to choose to live. I need to survive. I am in the group that is at highest risk in this country. And so I need self-esteem. I need to receive care. I have chronic and recurring depression. I'm not alone amongst Indian people. I need intervention when I withdraw, if I lose touch with reality. And I need to be reminded who I am. I need this to name myself, to find respect and acceptance. I need to care for the people that I am connected to, for my grandmother, who is in a nursing home in Martin, South Dakota, in Bennett County. I need to be able to respond to the needs and concerns and problems of my family, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins, my brothers and sisters, more than those that are my relatives, my blood relatives. I need reconciliation with all who are separated from me. As a Lakota woman, as a woman in America in the 1980s, I need you. I need each of you. I need you to see me, to hear me, to respond to me. When I reach out, I need you to reach back. I need your support. When I try to be an advocate for Indian people or for you, I need a lot of support. I need a lot of information. I need to know much in order to be an effective advocate. I need to know who you are, what your needs are. I need you to translate in the language of the church system. I need education. There are so many things that I still need to learn. How to speak to you, how to preach, how to be an effective advocate, how to generate resources for ministry, how to listen, how to take effective action, how to respond lovingly. I need to have the Native American ministry recognized, to be heard, to be supported. I need to have time to be part of Indian life, to go to Sundance, to be in powwow, to study. My children are like me. They're Indian and they're white. They're bicultural. And I need to learn ways to help them, to support their development. I need to lift up a voice of deep concern. Our world is a world of mixed marriages. Mixed-blooded children. And I am concerned for those who live in many cultures. And I need to do something about that. I need to challenge the racism of the interracial marriage taboos. I feel a need to call for deep compassion for those who choose to love, maybe even especially across racial lines or cultural lines. I need to be able to be heard, to cry with those who cry for compassion, for support, for healing. For all those who are like me, maybe even all you who are like me, who are struggling to survive emotional, physical, sexual, abuse, poverty, hunger, racism, sexism. As an Indian woman, as a Christian woman, I need to proclaim the good news. There is a via negativa, a cross in Christianity. There is suffering and hurt and heartache. There's a lot of pain and loss and death. Southern Africa, Biafra, Ethiopia, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Bhopal, Nicaragua, Pine Ridge, Wounded Knee, Appalachia. The list is really long. And I need to respond not only to the needs and the cries of the indigenous people in this land, but the indigenous and the powerless and the voiceless around the world. This is a dark and hurting world. Yet there is this truth. In spite of my anger, my pain and betrayal, I have learned there is hope. I'm here to say this to you. There is hope. I am a witness. And I am a witness because of this, because I have been loved. Even though my mother was not able to be with us, and at the age of 5, I was left with brothers and sisters who were 8 and 4 and 3 and 1 and a half and 16 days old. She left us her name, like she gave me her maiden name. Even though my father hurt me, he kept me alive, and I have survived. And in that, I have learned this good news about God's love. I learned it in catechism, in First Communion, in confirmation, in Luther League. Lutheran people shared God's love with me. Even in this very place, in this room, 20 years ago, I was here at Holden. Lutheran people have been part of saving me, comforting me, and helping me to heal. And you have taught me that I could choose to live because I am loved. And now I cherish my living. A man who is of Jewish heritage, German, Lutheran, red hair and freckled, is the father of my children. He cherishes me. For 18 years, this man and I have been together. And because I am loved, I have learned the truth about love, and I can choose to live. Because I am loved, I can see love, and I can see life, and I can feel new life, and I can feel resurrection. I can feel spring. And I know this, that we are all one family.
I need to call out this truth. We are all related. In my language, of the Lakota people, Mitakwease, we are all related. And we must see life in this world. We must open our eyes and see the life, cherish and treasure it. I have made peace with myself, and we must make peace with ourselves. And we must make peace with our land and with each other. We must prize and cherish the living things. We must prize and cherish the very stones, the air, the water. We must preserve and protect all of life. Anything that kills another, that damages a living thing before it's ordered dying, kills me and kills you. And I know that we are all deeply loved. And I believe that we can choose to live. When I was so suicidal at times, I always thought that that was inevitable, that that was the end of the story, that was going to happen. It had to happen. And I really began to heal on the day that I realized that dying was not inevitable. Suicide was not the only way that I had a choice, was a door that I could walk through, but I didn't have to. And that message is one that we all need when we're talking about saving our world. When I came to the realization, number one, that I was trying to kill myself, that I was doing dangerous things, that if I kept doing those things, I would succeed in not living. And I realized that I didn't have to do those things. I could choose to live. In our world, we do not have to continue to build nuclear weapons for destruction. We do not have to continue to destroy Mother Earth. We do not have to continue to hurt children. We can choose to do other things. We can choose to live. It's an awesome responsibility, but it's something that we can do. And as an Indian woman, this is my need and my concern. I would invite each of you on the other side of that paper to name your needs and your concerns and choose to live. Thank you. Maybe you could take a few minutes to respond.
Since July, and I still can't say it. One in the spirit is an experience that we have set up so that people, all kinds of people, could travel together, mate together, and spend enough time together to get some sense of the Native American spirituality. In the first 2 years, we met on Hood Canal at the Belfair Retreat Center. And as a part of that experience of getting to know each other and talking about the experience of Indian people and talking about what it means to be an Indian and what Indian spirituality can be for some people. And then we traveled to the Mud Bay Shaker Church. Indian Shaker Church is not Shaker on the East Coast where the people are all dying out because they don't have relationships. Indian Shaker Church is a different religion called the Shaker religion, the Shaker faith, and it's fairly active in the Pacific Northwest. And it's quite an experience. Have any people here been in a Shaker worship experience? It's quite an experience. They have bells, and you who are Lutheran bell ringers would be horrified. Because they take those bells of all sizes, and the little bitty babies get the little bitty bells, and the leaders get the big bells, and they ring the bells for 4 or 5 or 6 hours. Ring the bells and dance, and that's what you would remember. You would experience so much more than that, but when you walked away from it, you would never forget those bells. The next night, we went to the Skokomish smokehouse religion. It's an Indian religion, an Indian spirituality that's fairly active in the Pacific Northwest and Canada, where they have what they call the spirit dancers. Have any of you been to the smokehouse and seen the spirit dances? These people. 2 big cedar fires. You would remember the cedar fires and the open holes in the ceiling. Lutheran money put the roof on that smokehouse because the Lutheran people, you Lutherans, support Indian choices in spirituality, and you express that support by helping people, and their roof burned, and so the Lutheran money put the new roof on that smokehouse church. And so you would remember the 2 big cedar fires and the feast that the people prepared because you came, the celebration that they had because you were with them, and then the dancing, the spirit dancing that went on. Well, this year we traveled to the other side of the mountains and into Oregon for One in Spirit. We went down to the Warm Springs Reservation in Warm Springs, Oregon, and we stayed in the tribally owned resort, Kanita Lodge, which is a four-star resort. AAA only gives it 3 stars. But it is an exciting place to be. It is a hot springs, and it has a traditional spiritual gathering place in the wintertime. And we went into the singing house, and we learned that we Lutherans could be called the banner people, even as we call them the smokehouse people, or the singing house people, or the longhouse religion. They might say we're the banner religion. And another thing they called us was the singing religion, the singing people. That would be the Lutherans. We went into the singing house, and we created a circle of sharing. They had just built this house, opened it up. And they were in their 5th day of sacred days. They were having us sing. And so they had been dancing. First night they danced till about 2, and the next night they danced until about 3, and the next night they danced until about 4, and the next night they danced until about 5, and this was to be the 5th night, and they were going to dance all night and sing. And we walked in there, and they had just opened it, and they had this post strung up. And they had about 100 blankets and beadwork and material and all the things that they had gotten together this 5th night. That would be all given away. And everybody who came would take something home, maybe a blanket or a gift, some kind of a gift. How many of you have ever been to a giveaway? If I were to invite you to worship with me, we might have a feast because you came, and we might have a giveaway because we're so glad that you're here. And then you would be receiving beadwork or blankets or whatever it is that they would offer you. If you do get it, chance to go to an Indian dinner or an Indian feast, and someone offers you something, Tupperware bowl, glass, carved salmon, whatever, take it. So this is what the banner is, that for a giveaway at One in the Spirit, I invited people who were sharing the experience with us to be creative as you've been creative here and make something while they were there. And I told them that we probably would be participating in a giveaway. Well, there were some very beautiful women there, pastors and lay women, and they made this for me for a giveaway. And this is a shield, which is very traditional Plains art is in the form of a shield. Indian art is in the form of a shield. A symbolic shield. And the woman, and some of you may know her, Tina Krause, who did the stitching of these knots. They shared that those were very powerful knots. And the other women stitched the rest of it. And the meaning of this is the this is the symbol of a woman, the symbol of the womb giving birth to new life, and the four black are for the four directions. We talked about the four directions, the six directions. But also, they said to me, for the wounds of Christ. And then each of them wrote their names on it and stitched it. And so this was my banner from One in the Spirit last weekend. The image of God as Mother has been tremendously healing for me. That was a long answer to your question. One of the ideas that you may have heard before about Indian people is that every moment is a sacred moment, and every word is
a sacred word, and every space is a sacred space. And so, if you see Indian people, particularly someone dressed in traditional clothing, go like this, you want to know what's going on. What you're doing is acknowledging the motion of the universe, and you are putting yourself in harmony with the motion of the universe, and so that you are preparing yourself, re-centering yourself with the universe. So maybe as we end and do our sacred thing, you might want to center yourself. The way the world goes. Thank you very much.